What's good, everyone? My name is Jacob Moses, community builder at Strongtowns, and welcome to It's the Little Things, a Strongtowns podcast where in each episode, we focus on a different action that you, the concerned citizen, the elected official, the city planner, can take to make your town stronger. This episode's action, creating healthy communities. At Strongtowns, we don't claim expertise in public health. However, as the years have passed, we've learned from our readers and members in public health how the built environment, one of our core focuses at Strongtowns, relates to health. For example, we've learned how walkable neighborhoods can encourage more physical activity, and how infill development, where we develop on existing lots and neighborhoods as opposed to new suburban developments on the edge of town, ensure people are closer to essential services, such as grocery stores and community clinics. In this episode, we dig deeper into the relationship between the Strongtowns approach and creating healthy communities. To help us unpack this action, we have Dan Burden on the podcast, Director of Innovation and Inspiration at Blue Zones, a multifaceted organization that works with cities and towns across the country to help people lead healthier lives, especially in relation to their neighborhoods. For over 40 years, Dan has worked in community and transportation planning, and today, through Blue Zones, helps communities create healthier places for its citizens. In this episode, you'll learn how building healthy communities relates to building financially resilient communities, and how you can begin to start building a healthier place in your own community, including why we should take a neighborhoods first approach to creating healthy communities, how to partner with local leaders to create a shared vision, and how Blue Zones can help throughout the process. Enjoy. Hey there, Dan. How are you today?
Well, I'm fine, Jacob. Delighted to be able to speak to all your listeners.
Yes. Thanks so much for agreeing to be on the podcast. It's going to be a good time. How's life in Port Townsend?
Oh, it's beautiful. Well, this is our season. Every day a new set of colors come out of the ground. It's
awesome.
Spectacular.
Yeah. That sounds lovely. Well, Dan, so happy to have you on the podcast today. We have a great action to cover together, and that is creating healthy communities. And Dan, I know this is your life's work with Blue Zones, and I know listeners will get a great opportunity to learn more about the work you guys do, how you're helping cities and towns all across the country. And Dan, this is a particularly timely action as well. Just this week, I was conversing with Chuck Marone, the Strongtowns president and founder, and you know he's just finished his book. It's coming out this October. And we were conversing about, you know, of course, Strongtowns will never claim to be, you know, the expert on public health or healthy communities. You know, our bread and butter is building financially resilient places. However, as we've looked back on the past 10 years, we have lots of members and readers who work in public health. Our community organizers centered around creating more healthy communities. So it's been great to see how, you know, this Strongtowns approach is helping our peers that are trying to build healthy communities as well. So Dan, I'm so excited to hear your thoughts on how listeners can create healthier communities in their own neighborhoods. To get us started, Dan, I would love to learn, what did you and your team observe in cities and towns across the world that motivated you all to start this organization?
Yeah, great question. We wanted to figure out why a number of people are way out living the others in their communities.
Yeah.
And so National Geographic sponsored Dan Buettner, our founder, to embed himself in those cities. People knew people were out living their projection. And they were looking for common principles. And when they did the analysis, they came up with a number of conclusions that the people who are living in these communities are taking all the years of life that genetically they're allowed to have.
Yeah.
And it turned out lifestyle was the most important, along with nutrition and the built environment, purpose in life, all the principles which your listeners can download. But he wanted then to come back to the U.S. and find a way to reverse engineer to see if we could take a community and apply the principles in common and then add live years of life to folks and health. And it was an amazing result. Albert Lea, Minnesota was the first community, and they continue to prosper. They keep moving forward on adding to the health. And it's all about active living, active transportation, eating the right foods, all the things you'd expect, right?
That's right, Dan. And what I was most encouraged by, I was reading more about Blue Zones and, you know, those five cities, whenever y'all first started that, y'all announced as, you know, this is the ideal Blue Zone. You know, these places aren't healthier and these people aren't living longer lives because, you know, they have this beautiful multi-million dollar recreational facility so they can, you know, go on the mountain climbing thing or, you know, lift up some dumbbells. Like you said before, it's an element of their built environment. You know, if they need to get the day's needs, you know, they're not hopping in the car and driving 10 miles. They're going on foot. Is that what Dan observed in these places? That, you know, it was really just about daily life can be done without having to hop in the car.
And that's it, exactly. Health does not occur inside a gymnasium. It's, and this is good news, because it's very affordable for people to be able to live in a neighborhood where they just naturally find it easy, if not even easier, to walk or bike for a number of destinations, a nearby park, green spaces, quieter streets, all the things that Strong Towns is about turn out to be the formula for making walking, bicycling, the natural choice, the easy choice, and what we like to say, the inevitable choice, that yeah. One day everyone can just do it as long as we design our towns correctly.
That's right, Dan. It's a result of their surroundings. I'd love to talk about the actual work that you guys do in cities. So you guys are actually on the ground in the neighborhoods of the communities that you work with, correct? Can you tell us more about that process of working with communities?
Yes, we're already working or have completed our work in 48 communities. And it's a very robust way to go about doing it. We first come in and do what we call a readiness assessment. Is the community ready in terms of their structure, in terms of their staffing, to pull off the changes in their communities that they need? Is their motivation? And once we determine that a community is ready and they find the funds, almost always related to health, we then power up a four-stage process of discovery, design, development. We really want to be very logical in how we assist the communities. And we also want the programs to be sustainable. The programs almost always are structured for 3, sometimes 5 years. We hire staff, a local staff, and truly map out blueprint for that town, since every town's different, yeah. What are the right steps? Exactly.
So, Dan, how do you give these communities like ownership of the process? Like, of course, Blue Zones, they have the technical side down. They know how to do the research. They know how to measure outcomes. But I imagine at first it can maybe be intimidating for some of these cities and towns. You know, of course, they want to be healthier. But, you know, a lot of information being thrown at them at first. How do you give communities a sense of ownership throughout this process?
Yes, exactly. We first of all, work through committee structure. We know that the ideas have to come from the community. Mm-hmm. We don't come in and impose some outside ideas. We figure out where the community is, and then we join the community wherever they are. So if they're a more rural community, more suburban in scale, or they're a very large community, our biggest community so far is Fort Worth, Texas, we join them where they are, and then we give them a strategic approach to pick the kinds of policies, build in some solutions they can apply in the first 100 days, and then others that are going to take more time, more budget, and a more collaboration. And we bring working groups together. One of our biggest problems in the country right now is that we we have engineers who only work with their type of engineering or mm-hmm. a planner or even health folks. What we're trying to do is bring everyone together, see that the problems in a city have emerged because there hasn't been that collaboration. So the magic, if there is magic in Blue Zones, it's getting people to commit, to understand they're in for the long haul, but they have to produce results. For that reason, I love the three-year window.
Yeah.
If we can't produce the results in 3 years, well, we're taking the wrong approach. But we end up doing it and then find there's energy for the programs to continue on their own without the assistance of Blue Zones.
Oh, Dan, that's so interesting. And I appreciate you bringing up the point of, you know, how do we build this coalition among several stakeholders? I think people call it the wrong measure, wrong pocket problem, where, you know, say there's a developer who in his or her neighborhood center, they decide to build this great, perhaps Blue Zones inspired development. You know, maybe include some affordable housing, maybe it has some job training on site, maybe a healthy little corner of a bodega where they can get some healthy product. You know, inevitably, that's going to lead to residents living healthier lives, perhaps having to be admitted to the hospital less often. You know, that's cost savings for the hospital. However, I think it's rare that, you know, that small developer gets credit for it. So it's great to hear how if we can get everyone to buy in from the beginning and see everyone's value throughout this process, maybe it means more investment and more acknowledgement of, you know, the value of actually building healthier neighborhoods.
Yeah, that, and here's the cool thing. The developer ends up making more money and the community tax base is enriched when yep. we build for walkability, for compact building form. We're using less land. It's a more sustainable model. It's one that has a much brighter financial picture, both in the early years and then throughout the life of a neighborhood. We see that it's just the best way to go. We shouldn't be yes. building communities without health in mind, you know?
That's right, Dan. And Blue Zones really lets this shine through your life radius model. I'm super, super excited to see this on y'all's website. And it makes total sense, and I'm going to have you elaborate on it as well in case I miss anything. But it really just states that, you know,
yeah.
we conduct 90% of our lives in our neighborhoods. So if we're going to talk about how can we create healthier communities, you know, we're not saying let's build another hospital. Let's say, hey, let's actually get into these neighborhoods where people are conducting their lives, where they're getting groceries, where they're having interactions, and see if we can start there. Why did y'all choose this model, Dan? And if I missed anything, please elaborate.
Yeah, so the model of a life radius, and for your listeners to fully grasp it, if you as a listener were to think through where you live, how far do you have to go to get to your nearest park or mm-hmm. public realm? How far to the nearest school? How far to do some quick shopping? And we're really talking about a radius based on the human footprint.
Yeah.
You can also have a radius, of course, built on the greater distance a bicycle covers. And if you had to drive, that you don't have to go more than, say, a five-minute drive. All this is the right scale. And so by putting all the right mixes of uses in a community, the way we always built communities historically, then people have a much improved lifestyle. They just naturally bump into other people. They are able to fulfill many of the needs in their daily life, if not for a whole week or longer, yeah. without having to jump in the car every hour or two.
Yes, that's so encouraging, Dan. And for listeners, I mean, whenever we, of course, take what Dan says into account, what we talk about as Strong Towns of how land is the base on which we build community wealth, when we zoom out, it's so exciting to see how all of this is interconnected. You know, if we make better use of our land, don't just keep neighborhoods under glass or strictly single-family zoning where, yeah, maybe they can walk around the block with the dog, but that's really about it. Not many opportunities to get the day's needs, be able to get a banana, healthy produce, be able to get a workout in. that's heavily restricted whenever we aren't thoughtful with the way we use land. So, Dan, I appreciate you making that correlation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. It's actually at the core of what we do. And when we work first with the community, we're looking for some great examples that can emerge that prove the financial viability, the livability, all of the aspects. Often we'll start with a downtown. Most towns we work in do have a downtown. They might be struggling a bit, but we start working with those tools, those strategies that help create mixed-use components in a downtown.
Yes.
And reduce the need for vast areas to be parking lots, things like
yes.
that.
Yes.
And then we want to make the links to the nearest neighborhoods, and because those are all easy walking or biking distances.
Yes.
So once we add to the housing stock and the other choices, then we start to see the magic come alive. More people populating the streets, more people bumping into one another, much higher social discourse on the streets. All the things awesome. We love to see. Yeah,
that's right, Dan. And that results in higher sales tax revenue for communities, better social capital. People run into each other, sharing their hopes and dreams, ideas. I love that, Dan. And to bring it back to the health component, I mean, think about like the five health domains. We have genetics, environmental exposure, behavioral patterns, and healthcare.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we can't so much control our genetics. Healthcare at the time, I mean, it really depends on if there's a hospital in your neighborhood or some kind of community clinic. But the rest of them, it totally depends on the neighborhood. And again, that's such a reminder where we think about how do we create healthy communities? Where do we invest? We start in the neighborhoods.
Yes.
And Dan, I want to shift a little bit. People surely understand what Blue Zones is all about. They understand your perspective and how you're working with communities. I imagine many of our listeners are inspired to, you know, step out their own front doors and, you know, look for elements to make their own community a healthier place. If a listener is inspired to take that first step, how do you recommend that they observe their neighborhood, observe their community through that Blue Zones lens?
Absolutely. One of the most important things for any of your listeners to do is once you step outside, look for the things that make your street, your block, your whole neighborhood walkable and livable, and which ones are taking away from that. So as an example, the speed of cars, the lack of ways to get across the street safely, to feel comfortable. In some regions of the country, the lack of green.
Mm-hmm.
And so all the things that start to make a community feel like a place where you want to be, where you want to invest, these are the things to observe. If a motorist, for example, is doing the wrong thing, they're not being courteous to pedestrians, those are things to try to figure out, well, why? And there are always simple answers. For example, motorists who are driving 30 or faster are not going to yield the right of way to their own neighbors.
Yeah, that's and right.
So by observing these things and then understanding how decisions get made in the community and then working with the community to come up with model projects, perhaps in your own neighborhood, that's the beginning point of change. And it's amazing once model projects get built, how that can then be applied to the entire city.
And then I love that description of, you know, just stepping outside and observing your community. We had Alyssa Walker. She's the editor over at Curbed LA on the podcast, I think episode 5. And that was her main message to listeners. It's like, you know what? Like maybe you're not a formal planner or urban designer, but you know what makes a healthy neighborhood. You know what makes a comfortable living surroundings. And to be able to trust those observations. And then you mentioned, you know, building a coalition around those ideas, taking time to share your concerns with elected officials. Dan, we call those our strong citizens. These are the people who, of course, love where they live and want to take the small steps to make it better, get involved in local government to share their ideas on a citywide platform. I want to talk about some next steps. You know, I've observed my community. Dan, what are some small steps that cities can take that you've noticed can give the greatest return? You know, first we observe, we share it with our peers and our elected officials. Once the city's bought in, what do you think are some small like steps that they can take to start to build a healthier community?
Yeah, I think the most important thing is to join together in groups. If you already have a group formed, great. Make sure you got the right folks involved. The time where a single citizen can perform the magic, those years are waning. What we now find is that the more people who are willing to work together and take the leadership, the sooner change occurs. It's not like you're walking into your city council asking for a specific favor. You're really trying to alter the community long term to take nothing but healthy steps. And so by joining together with the right people, and it doesn't have to be a large group. It can be just four to six folks, but more than just citizens. Make sure that you've got people that you're working with that understand planning, engineering, health, and parks and recreation. And then pick a project. And it can be a small project. It could be something as simple as bringing a park back to life, a street tree planting program, anything that gets people going and motivated. And we've seen project after project where it only took one idea or one thing that people pursued, and then all of a sudden, they couldn't stop. One of my favorite stories, I was traveling through a small town in California and saw these people building a trail, just citizens.
Cool.
So I went up and interviewed them, and they said, yeah, we found our county couldn't afford to maintain our road. It fell into ruin. The post office wouldn't deliver mail to us anymore. So we formed a nonprofit, and then we went out and we fixed the road. Huh. And we had so much fun doing this that every other weekend we joined together and we figure out what our next project will be. And that day they were building a trail.
Oh, how cool. How cool. Mm-hmm. Now we still need to keep our local governments accountable. Let's make sure that they're not spending too much money on new roads, make sure they can maintain what they got. And then in the meantime, to have strong citizens willing to step up and, you know, do their part. They want trails. City at the time can afford it. Heck, I'm still going to go out and build some trails.
Yeah.
That's awesome. And I imagine, Dan, that these relationships take time to foster. You know, I think about the healthy food aspect of creating a healthy community. Maybe my neighborhood only has a corner store, and it's a corner store that sells traditional corner store food. You got your gummy worms, Frito-Lays, Cheetos, Dr. Pepper, whatever. You know, if I have a passion for creating healthy neighborhoods and I just barge into this corner store and say, hey, you need to start carrying some apples and oranges. We need to move the chips, move everything else to bring in some more healthy food. You know, that's not the way to approach it, you know, because those are their sales. That's what sells.
Yeah.
So I think it's important to, you know, like you said, start these conversations early. Maybe come at it with a more empathetic approach and understanding everyone's existing perspectives on the neighborhood. And once we find that unified vision, going from there.
Exactly. Yeah. And it is amazing where you find that toehold. But try not to do it alone. Try to do it with a small group. And And one of the reasons people end up living longer is they create what we call a moai. It's based on a Japanese term and concept where if you have a walking moai or a bicycling moai, a group that likes to regularly go out and do things together, in time, have a moai where you're actually going out and bringing the right kinds of change to your community, neighborhood, or even your own block. Yeah.
That's awesome, Dan. Mm-hmm. And listeners, if you're looking for that, you know, that tribe locally, we have something called Local Conversations. These are groups where readers and members share similar geography and meet either online and in person and start talking about how they can apply Strong Towns concepts, which, Dan, from what you've explained today, align with blue zones as well, to start creating healthier, more financially resilient communities. And I'll make sure to include a link to Local Conversations in the show notes. Dan, You covered some awesome stuff for us.
Thank
now,
you.
Now, where does Blue Zones fit in this picture? How can Blue Zones help listeners create healthy communities? I know in particular, I want to talk about the Made to Move grant that y'all recently announced.
Well, exactly. And that's a really good beginning point. If anyone of your listeners are in the 100 to 300,000 range population, then your community can qualify. The degree brand, Unilever, has joined with us. They're providing the money. We're providing the leadership to do the training and to select the communities that will receive the grants. It's currently underway. We just now are announcing the grant, and we're hoping to have some communities that really are already started apply for this grant. We chose this particular population range because we wanted it to have impact on the community, so we didn't want it to be too big. And we wanted the community to be large enough that it would have proper staffing and proper leadership and likely a committee structure where things can be pulled off in a short period of time. We want to produce results within a year. So that's why we chose the strategy or the approach we're taking in the Made to Move grant program. And I'm assuming, Jacob, you'll be able to provide a contact list for people. They can just go to our website, bluezones.com.
Right.
Okay, good.
Very good. Yeah, we'll have some show notes underneath the podcast player where everyone can find the links to the local conversations, to the Made to Move grant application. And Dan, to wrap up, where can people learn more about y'all in general? I know you mentioned your websites. Any other good platforms where listeners can learn more about Blue Zones?
Yeah, it's a very robust website, and we try to share as much information as we can. It's just www.bluezones.com, all lowercase.
Awesome. Well, Dan, this has been an absolute joy. Thank you so much for sharing your experience and wisdom with us. I know I'm so happy to hear that, of course, as Strong Towns continues to pursue financially resilient places, in the process, we have a great opportunity to create healthy communities as well. So I totally appreciate you sharing your perspective and look forward to chatting very soon and following up with the Made to Move grant. See how kind of work you guys are doing in cities and towns.
Fantastic. Keep doing the great work you do. One of the first things I do in the morning is see what the new releases are with Strong Towns.
I love
it. One of my favorite sources.
We're happy to hear it, Dan. Thank you.
Thank you. Say hi to Chuck for me.
I will. Thanks, Dan. We'll chat soon.
Bye-bye.
Thanks so much for listening, everyone. If you're enjoying the content, please subscribe to It's the Little Things on iTunes, and we will chat next week. See ya.